Welcome to Profiling Criminal Minds. I'm Dan.
I'm Dr. Redmond.
And we are here for, that's right, a special bonus episode to talk about a brand new movie that you might be hearing a bit more about come award season. we're hoping.
Well, yeah, who knows, eh?
I know, it's a crazy thing to try to predict, but, you literally never know. I was going to say, of course we're talking about Richard Jewell, but there's no reason you would,
know that,
unless you looked at the title of the episode. The reason to us, it's of course we're talking about Richard Jewell is in a few months from now, really most of the year from now, you're going to hear us talking about an episode of Criminal Minds, that was largely about the Richard Jewell story. And it is one of the scummiest things Criminal Minds has ever done. And that's a high bar to clear. So, whew, it was a rough episode in a lot of ways, and we got very angry about it. And amazingly, was it the same week as Mr. Scratch, or was it like the week before Mr. Scratch? It was pretty close.
Yeah. It might have been the same week. I tell you, we had a rough week that week.
Oh, we had a rough week. Whether they were next to each other in the same episode, it was a rough week. But the point is, they decided to take on the Richard Jewell story, except they created an alternate history version of the Richard Jewell story, where the FBI was 100% completely justified in everything it did, and they were right about Richard Jewell. So that was troubling. So we decided, hey, Clint Eastwood has made a Richard Jewell movie. Let's see what that is like. And I gotta say, I loved it.
I loved it. I think it's the best thing he's done since Gran Torino.
Yeah, I would completely agree with that. It's just so tense, so well done, so humane and caring. Like, he's done this weird obsession he's had with, like, these strange quasi-action movies, like when he did that one about the terrorist attack on a train where he cast all of the real people who were there to play themselves in a region, like...
a reconstruction.
A rescue 911 style reconstruction of the thing, but then he put it in theaters. Like, he's done these weird experiments. But this is just a real movie that is, just a great biography of a real person. And before we start getting into it, I just want to recommend, and I think you're going to back me up on this one, mm-hmm. Everyone should go see this movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I have absolutely. We have suggested... 8 months from now, which means you can get the DVD or whatever, right? That everybody should probably check this out.
No, people are going to be listening to this while it's still in theaters. We're not holding back this episode until that episode of Criminal Minds goes on.
Unless you live in Sault Ste. Marie.
Yeah, there are places where this movie didn't get. Dr. Redmond here lives in Sault Ste. Marie, which of course has just one movie theater, and so they're very limited in what movies actually get there, which is kind of tragic, because you miss out on some good stuff. But they do get the hits.
Yes, the biggies.
The big
and
ones.
Then they will stay there forever.
But anyway. Think Avengers Endgame is still there. But anyway, more importantly.
I'm sorry.
Well, no, I mean...
Almost.
With the way Disney controls its prints, who the hell knows, right?
Yeah.
But yes, it is a really good movie, and if you haven't seen it yet, run down to the theater to get it, and if you don't have time to run down to the theater listening to this later, it will be on some service, or you can buy the DVD soon, and it's absolutely worth checking out. It is just, beautifully well-made. Every shot serves the right purpose. Great camera work. Fantastic performances by all of the actors. Just, I was blown away by the Richard Jewell movie. I didn't think, Clint Eastwood was going to do such a great job with it. I have some issues that we'll talk about in a second, but just a wholehearted recommendation. Everyone should see this movie.
Yeah, well, there might be some issues with the movie, but I have more issues with the reviews and everything else about it. There's a whole bunch of things I have issues with, but most of it is not with the movie.
Well, what? Now, you said you watched a review of this where did they completely miss the point? Did they misrepresent the content? Like, what was wrong with this review you saw?
Oh, well, they decided that they were going to focus on the Kathy Scruggs character.
Right.
In this review. So they talked to the editor, I guess, in chief of...
The Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
Yes, the paper that she worked for. And they had some movie reviewer on, and they just started talking about this horrible thing that Clint Eastwood had done with saying that she traded sex for information.
Yeah.
And like, I saw all of this before we saw the movie.
Right.
We saw the movie in Ottawa, and so I saw that, and because I'm teaching a course on film and historical narrative, I saw that. I looked, okay, let's go see what people are saying. And of course they just said, well, the movie isn't worth watching. It's horrible. You can't, once they did that, then okay, it's not okay. Even worth watching. That was basically what this reviewer said. I mean, I'd have to go back. I'm now paraphrasing. It's 10 days later, or 2 weeks.
But they were willing to dismiss the entire movie.
Movie because of
the portrayal of Kathy Scripps.
Then I pulled up, because I'm putting these on my course website for my students. Right. So I put that up there, and then I put up a CBC review, all from like the 12th and the 13th of December when it came out. And so then I put up the CBC movie review, and, you know, so the person who's hosting whichever show it was on, well, there's a controversy about this. And he said, well, yes, probably didn't have to do that. And she was going, well, who's responsible? Well, the writer. Well, yeah, but Clint Eastwood has to take responsibility for putting that in, because he's the director and he kept it in. And then the guy said, yes, but. You know, that aside, and then started to talk about the movie as a whole and the Richard Jewell story.
Yeah.
Okay. And of course he said, yes, you got to go see this. And he basically said the same things as we did.
Okay.
Shall I talk about my issue with the Kathy Scruggs thing?
Please.
Okay. So we'll talk about that first before we get into the movie as a whole, because after I had finished watching the movie, I was so pissed off. I'm at the point of going, I don't think I just want to stay clear of Twitter, CNN, which is a relatively even-handed. I'm watching all of this because, of course, the horrible thing was to suggest that she was trading sex for this. And, of course, and she's no longer with us to defend herself.
Yeah.
Okay, that was how it was going, and it was just this terrible thing in the Me Too movement. You shouldn't have done that, etc. So when I got home, now, her portrayal in the movie, yeah, let me just talk that straight through, right? I'll Please. Talk that straight through before I talk about the research I did after I got home yesterday watching the movie.
Yeah.
And... So, yes, okay, so she goes in, right? Like, first of all, you see her dancing at Kenny Rogers.
Yeah.
When he's singing The Gambler and stuff.
Yeah.
And she's there, and she's yakking away talking to this FBI agent who's, like, bored out of his mind because nothing's going on, and he feels like he's wasting his time just standing there. He's not even looking at anything, right? He's not even doing his job properly, and she's saying, well, come on, let's dance. You know, and she's doing the Macarena at one point, at another time. And, you know, he's, as I said, bored to tears. And she's, you know, she's just having fun. You know, she's bored, too, because this is such a boring thing that she's been given to do.
There's nothing to cover at a party before the Olympics.
Before the Olympics, right? Yeah. So she was just there, and she's bored out of her mind, blah 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 blah. Okay, so that's all you see. And then, of course, and she's talking to her desk partner, almost like she who's also a reporter for the Atlanta
Constitution. Yeah
and she's talking to him anyway, and then the bomb goes off. This is the next day the bomb goes off.
Yeah.
And you know, so it's kind of a problem. And then you see a few days go past, it's a whole bunch of stuff. And then you see her trying to get some information from this FBI guy in a bar, because he's sitting in the bar drinking. Right. And, you know, so she's fooling around. She's going, come on, give me something. What's going on? I've heard that you've got someone that you're looking at, and blah, 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 you know. And he basically, I don't know if he says something like, well, yeah, but what's in it for me?
Yes.
Right? And she says, well, you know. And she, you know, she says, yeah, well, you know. And she sort of says, well, you know, we can have a little sexual encounter or whatever, you know, if you wanna. And he, and then she, anyway, eventually he tells her that they're looking at Richard Jewell.
Yeah.
Right? And so she says, fine, and blah, 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 blah. And then she looks at him and she says, well, so you want to go to the car? You want to get a room? Whatever.
Yeah.
And he looks at her and says, oh, you really meant you're going to go? You meant it?
Yeah.
She says, sure. Right? And off they go. Right? And so in the movie, it's not seriously. And then the thing you have to take is, so she brings it in. So other people, it turned out, had this information. She goes to her editor. Other people had the information. Nobody wanted to print it.
Yeah.
And then, and he says, the editor again says, do you have other confirmation of these sources? She said, yes. And so they print it and it goes on the front page and everybody gets it, right?
Yeah.
Everybody
reports it.
Right? And she gets a standing ovation from the reporting floor and the whole thing. It's just going peachy keen.
Yeah.
She wants to get more information and stuff like that, but things happen. And at one point, because Richard Jewell and his lawyer just show up because he passed a polygraph, they show up at the office. Richard Jewell's lawyer lambastes her.
Yeah.
Top to bottom, just reams her out in the reporter's room.
Yeah. The bullpen, you know, is what it's called.
Yeah, the bullpen. Sorry. Right? And reams her out. She sort of doesn't take it too well. Kind of covers it up, up, but nothing to see here, guys. And anyway, but then she does go and check out.
Yes.
Whether or not, because they said something about, and this is part of the
whether
plot.
Whether he could have possibly done.
He couldn't possibly have made the phone call.
That was called in the bomb a minute before the bomb went off. Yeah.
Yeah. There was no way he could have done it.
No.
So, but she goes and checks that out. She does her timing and the rest of it. And she looks at it and says, he couldn't have done it.
Yeah.
So she goes back to the FBI guy and says, what's going on here? And of course, he's pissed off at her because she burned him.
No, she didn't burn him. Burning
that's
someone.
That's how he feels.
That's how he feels. But burning someone is when you reveal them as a wit, as a thing.
That's the source.
And that didn't as a source, and that didn't happen. In fact, she, by the way, almost went to jail in real life to keep her sources from coming out.
So she didn't, right? But
no, she didn't.
Anyway, he was pissed off.
Yeah.
And she confronts him about this. And he says, well, yeah, we know that, but he probably. But he
could have had an accomplice.
He had an accomplice, you know. Well, who? Well, I don't know. It's like the FBI learned nothing from the Atlanta child murders.
No.
It's the same FBI.
Oh, it's the exact same FBI. The FBI in the exact same city.
Yep. Anyway, so then you move along. Like, this is, I'm only taking her story.
Story, of course.
And it's a small part of the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so then you see Kathy Bates as Richard Jewell's mother talking in a press conference.
Yeah.
The lawyer is there. She's talking in this press conference. And the Kathy Scruggs character is in the audience. And she starts to cry.
Yeah.
She's in the audience and you look and she's crying.
Yeah.
She's listening to this and the tears are falling down her face. Okay. Yeah. And that's the last actually you see of
her. Yeah, we don't ever see the character again after that.
No. And now, so I go back and start to check.
Yeah.
First of all, so I found something published by the Atlanta magazine in 2003. She died in 2001.
Okay.
It was called Requiem for a Reporter, Kathy Scruggs.
Yeah.
And it's a very lengthy, right, discussion of who she was, how she behaved, how she reported. She was hard drinking. She smoked. She swore. You know, yeah. Somebody, one of the cops said, you always know how desperate Kathy is for a story by looking at how short her skirt was. Is, right? Yeah. This was one of the things he was talking about. This was, you know, and of course her case was still in front of, because the Atlanta Constitution is the only one that
did not settle.
Not settle with Richard Jewell.
Yeah.
Because they only printed what the FBI had said and there was nothing untrue about it. But it turned out her paper did want to settle. She insisted that they fight it. And her life, and what it says is, and this is what I put, because I put this then again on my course website. What it said is that this was her downward spiral. This was this point where she started to fall apart. And the thing is, I mean, after she died, finally, the Atlanta Constitution was found to be right, and she was found to be right, and there was no settlement that they...
Yeah, no, everybody else settled, and this is the only one that went all the way to court, and they lost at court.
Uh-uh.
No, Richard Jewell's people lost his court.
Oh, yeah, Richard Jewell eventually lost.
Yeah, all of the other people Richard Jewell and his lawyer sued all settled, except for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, and they lost in court because it could not be shown that they did anything but report what was happening at the time.
Yeah,
they never accused him of doing anything he didn't do. All they ever did was report what the FBI was actually doing.
All the other stuff.
A lot of other people did, in fact, accuse him of being horrible, and that is why all of those guys
called him and did the profile thing, and it was terrible.
It was disgusting.
CNN changed its whole policy after that. Because CNN was raked over the coals. But anyway, let me continue. And then when they talk about her dying, right? Nobody said, like, you know, he said, well, you know, when she's dead. And I thought, well, did she die of cancer or something? No. She died of an opioid overdose.
Yeah.
Morphine.
Yeah.
And the coroner's, like the coroner's report, the medical examiner coroner's report has no cause. There is no indication whether it is suicide or just an accidental overdose.
Yeah.
But that was in, 2001. Now, the strange thing is both of them died at the age of 44.
That is weird. Because she was a couple of years older than him, and he died a few years later at the age of 44.
Well, and she died at 44.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. She was a few years older than he was, and he died a few years later, like 5 years later or something. Also at the age of 44, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, but it was so that meant that I'm looking at all of these people who are getting so bent out of shape about the portrayal of this woman and how unnecessary it was and the rest of it. And that has my brain going. I don't know how you feel about it, but I'm going, you know, the way it was treated was, first of all, not kind of sleazy. Then the other thing, as I'm driving back to Sault Ste. Marie today, I'm going, wait a sec. Women have control over their bodies. Yeah. Supposedly, women can use their bodies any way they want.
Here's the thing.
Bizarre thing. Okay. No, wait. You know, like.
No, I'm just going to cut you off here, and you can continue in a second. Here's the problem, right? The reason everyone's upset about this, 100% every part of the way the character is depicted, except for her being, you know, crying at the end, which she probably didn't do, because the real woman seems to have maintained that they did nothing wrong the whole time. So that was them trying to do a victory lap with this character. But the point is, like, there's no evidence that she ever said they did anything wrong. So I'm saying they are extrapolating based on the character they created. But here's the issue. Had you portrayed every part of this character's behavior the exact same way, I don't think anyone would have said word one. But here's the deal. In journalism, basically sleeping with someone for a story is under no circumstances something that anyone is ever permitted to do based on legal ethics, just like you're not allowed to pay someone for a story. 100%, no one, you could never do that under legal ethics. You will get fired. You will have to retract stories, but it is the worst thing, along with bribing someone for a story, that a reporter can do. So they were accusing her of the worst ethical violation that a reporter could possibly do when there is no evidence that she did that. And they have no evidence to back it up. And that is the issue. If you leave out her sleeping with John Hamm for the story, no one would say a word about her portrayal, because everyone says, yeah, that's how she was. Like, the rest of the portrayal, they say, is 100% accurate to how she was. What they got upset about was saying that she was a bad, completely unethical journalist, which everyone says she wasn't, and the courts vindicated her. So that is why they were upset. It's not her behavior, because everything she did other than sleeping with John Hamm is fine for a reporter to do. But they just decided to throw in, also she was sleeping with John Hamm to get stories. And that is why this whole thing came up. And you, if you want to get into whether or not reporters should be allowed to sleep with people for stories, I think they probably shouldn't be allowed to.
Okay, like I'm not.
But that is where the that is what people were upset about. That's why this whole fracas happened. Because they accused her of doing the worst thing a journalist can possibly do based on zero evidence.
Okay, number one, that's not how the review made it.
I read the Ron, the guy, her deskmate, Ron Martz, I read his article about it. And I read his article about it, and he's like, yeah, that's how she was. The film accurately portrays it, except, and then he pointed out how serious this is and how the fact is, for whatever you said about the way she behaved, partying, blah, 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 quote-unquote loose morals, she was an ethical journalist in every way. And she never would have slept with a reporter, a source for a story.
Right. And there is nothing okay from the writer or from, of course, Eastwood. He won't discuss anything.
No.
Right. I understand that.
Yeah.
But to say you shouldn't understand that. And I also think, I don't think that her crying, was because she thought she did anything wrong.
Yeah.
It's that she had to face, because, as I said, this requiem, and what he says, is that basically her life took a spiral after this, downwards. And it is that she was confronted, what that was supposed to be was that she was confronted with
the damage caused by what she had done.
Massive damage that was caused to these people because she reported something that really wasn't necessary to report.
No, it wasn't necessary to report, but it was not in any way false what she reported.
No, and and that's it. It wasn't that it was false. It was that if you thought about the people that you're reporting about, particularly since he was only a person of interest.
That's true.
Okay. And I agree with you that they could have left it out. I'm not saying they couldn't have left it out. But to sit there and tell me that I'm not supposed to watch this movie because of that.
No, that's insane. I agree with you on that front.
What to me was completely nuts.
It's asinine. It's completely over the line. No, I would not dismiss this whole movie because of a, I would argue, unethical thing Clint Eastwood and company did.
Yeah.
Because of one unethical thing they did, I wouldn't say you should throw away this entire movie. No, you were completely right. I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Now, mind you, he could have left it out too. I mean, it wouldn't have made any difference.
Not have been changed at all had the character not had sex with John Hamm. And honestly, it's a more accurate, I'm not going to say better or worse, it's a more accurate movie, right, to everyone's belief. Right, of what happened, everyone's statement about what happened is more accurate if she doesn't sleep with John Hamm for a story. And then we get into questions of adaptations. Well, why on earth did they make this statement about the character if there's no historical evidence to back it up? And it's because they want her to seem like a worse person. They want her to seem like a villain. John Hamm's a villain. The FBI is a villain, but they want a clear person in the media to say, this character in the media is the movie's villain. Here's the person persecuting him from the government, here's the person persecuting for the media, because it's too amorphous to say, and the problem is, the entire media destroyed, it's not like Kathy Scruggs destroyed his life. The entire media destroyed his life, but the movie needs a villain, and to make her a 100% villain, they need her to be completely unethical, and so they say, well, what? How can we make her extra awful? She'll sleep with someone for a story.
Well,
and
yeah,
that is why that's in there.
I would really sort of like to, because I didn't, you see, the thing is that didn't particularly, I didn't see that, because she doesn't remain the villain of the story.
No.
She's barely in the story after she is the one that says, yeah, we can go with this, because that's who they're looking at as a person of interest.
I know,
right?
And she doesn't, then John Hamm takes over
feature
as the film for that one scene at the end, yeah.
Yeah, except
but, and
that.
And you're right that John Hamm largely takes over as the film's villain, but my point is that because the media is his nemesis, right? Because the media is who did this to him, the filmmakers needed the media to be personified in a single person, and to make it clear how you were supposed to feel, they depicted her in the worst light possible.
Okay, so then ask me, okay, then explain to me, excuse me, why then did they have her cry?
Because if the villain, who's the worst person possible, ends up feeling bad about them, that just shows you how right Richard Jewell was and how wrong she was. You make the villain cry at the end and say, I was wrong.
Well, what's
she doesn't
the
say
end?
Was wrong.
She doesn't.
But it is the end.
But she doesn't say, no, it's
no,
not.
But her crying is her saying she's wrong. She's regretting what she's done. That's why she cries at the end of the movie. She's a horrible villain. And when even she realizes what a monster she was, well, then that's final confirmation. You know?
Yeah, well, I guess I just don't read it that way.
And that's fine. I mean, we are completely fine for us to disagree on this, but I'm just saying, they make her sleep with, my statement is, they make her sleep with John Hamm to make her out to be the worst person possible, and then they have her so that, oh my god, I've been a monster. She has a moment of realization of what a monster she was at the end of the movie, and that is her last moment in the movie, visibly realizing what a monster she was.
Unintended consequences of what she did.
Exactly.
In other words, what I would say is that she just did this because she's a reporter and reporters want to get these stories.
Oh, yeah.
And she didn't even think about the person that she was telling this story about and what it would do.
Oh, absolutely. And that is part of it. And it's, but again, I don't know how accurate her crying is, because again, there's a reason. Yeah, we don't. That part of it is.
Except that we know that somehow or another she was never the same after that.
Well, no, but she did spend the rest of her life involved in, you know, very serious lawsuits that could have financially ruined her and destroyed her newspaper. So, you know, that might have factored into the fact that her life took a turn for the worse.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
And by the way, Britt, speaking of. It's interesting that the lawsuits get completely left out of the movie.
Well, yeah, and that's an interesting thing. They don't even talk about any of the lawsuits.
No, it doesn't get mentioned at all.
No, at all, you know. I mean, I suspect we're going to end up thinking even more about this movie.
Oh, absolutely.
Somewhere along the line. I mean, I'll see, you know.
I think it's interesting that they leave out the lawsuits because they want this just to be about a man clearing his name, a man getting justice. But what happened was he also, you know, he sued and he got public apologies and huge amounts of money from the government and from a bunch of newspapers.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's not just, and it's worth noting that, like I said, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, because it muddies the story they're trying to tell if you face up the fact that Atlanta Journal-Constitution, right, did not settle and won the lawsuit, and
the
that she
was
threatened with jail over revealing her source inside the FBI, and she refused to give up her source when being threatened with jail, and a judge kept her from going out of jail because they had no grounds to put her in.
Yeah. It was like that part of it was rather interesting.
Yeah, that they would it's a fairly important part of the story, the lawsuits that came afterwards.
Yeah, and the thing is that it wasn't even her newspaper. Like her newspaper would have rather settled.
Yeah, because they've got insurance.
And she said no,
She said, I'm not going to admit I did anything wrong because I followed the journalistic code of ethics.
You can see that sort of all along. And she does say that when they accuse her, right?
Mm-hmm.
When Richard Jewell shows up, right? lawyer calls
to go and have the meeting and get the retraction from the, they're going to meet with the editor in chief to get a retraction.
Yeah. You know, that part of it is convoluted. And I don't think that was this. Well, I mean, we know it's very clear when you watch it. That was not the story.
No.
That Eastwood was interested in
telling at all.
Because the story itself, it was just, I still, sometimes I think I'm listening to that and it's true and they could have done other things. But of course, it was actually a 2-hour movie. It didn't seem that long.
No, it zips by. It's a very well-paced movie.
Yeah, and, so it's, and it just wanted to really cover his story. Now,
it's tough. I mean, it's tough because you're telling, like, the real story, but you're trying to turn, like, this guy's life into the least complicated version of it, like the most digestible. And when it comes right down to it, like the Richard Jewell story is the story of a guy who the government decided to throw under a bus.
Yeah.
You know, like the real villain of this movie is profiling.
Oh yeah.
That's the one, the most key reason we're talking about this is the movie's villain is profiling.
Yeah.
Because they get a scene. What do you have? And then the profiler comes in and he said, I want to focus on looking into the security guard because he, loser who lives with his mother, you know, wannabe cop, has behavioral stuff in the past, mistreated students, blah, 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 blah. Right. He exactly fits the profile of the kind of guy who, you know, blows up, sets a fire so he can put it out or reports crime so he can, you know. Be the ones who catch them, all right? And he fits our profile, and that was, and the fact that he fit their profile was all they had. They had nothing but a profile.
Yeah.
And guess what? I mean, and the film doesn't get into it. It was a guy who was bombing, who wanted to kill a bunch of people because Bill Clinton was, you know, was pro-abortion.
Yeah, I mean, that's the interesting thing.
That's the true story.
They say that they finally caught the guy that
Eric
did
Rudolph,
the bombing.
Yeah.
But they don't say why he did it, right?
He was a militia guy. They do mention that he was a militia guy, and he was a militia guy. But the thing that made him angry and the thing that motivated him was that he was an anti-abortion bomber, and they caught him for, like, an abortion clinic bombing.
Yeah.
And we can get into why that got left out of the movie.
Yeah, and who knows? Well,
who knows
part
why
of me goes,
that part of it.
Who knows why, you know, I can't. Given that Clint Eastwood, because, and let me say this at this point, because my initial reaction, I'm going, well, why did he put this in this way? And I'm going, and I don't know if I just said it to you. I said it to a couple of other people because he's still pissed off about losing his palimony suit.
Back in the
80s. And one of the things, one of the things, and I think it was, I still didn't go and look, and I think it was Sandra Locke, that he lived with this woman and he wanted her there. But one of the things he did, she got pregnant more than once because I guess he didn't want to use, you know,
protection.
Whatever.
Yeah.
And but they were living together for a long time. So she filed a palimony suit against him. And he fought it. He lost it. Right. But one of the things that he did was make her have abortions because he didn't want children.
Yep.
And that was one of the things that, you know,
if you want to hear more about this and you live in America, you can't hear more about this because Clint Eastwood threatened a series of lawsuits to get an unflattering biography from being published in America. If you live in Canada, you can read the biography of Clint Eastwood. If you live in Europe, you can read the biography of Clint Eastwood. You can't buy it in America because he is a very litigious man.
Yes, yes. And, you know, so why he would have left that out is beyond me, because he certainly isn't opposed to abortion.
I mean, although maybe he is now with the way the Republican Party has turned. Who knows? If he's changed his mind now that he's an old man.
He's a libertarian.
He's a libertarian. Okay, yeah. Yeah, he's a libertarian. You're right. He is a libertarian, fundamentally. And libertarians should not be anti-abortion. And yet all the guys who call themselves libertarians and get elected to Republican national office are all like anti-abortion. Weird how that works. How libertarian stops the way the... Being a libertarian is really just only for white men when it comes to these guys. Wait, we don't get to control women anymore? Oh, well, then, we can hold back on that belief.
Anyway, I mean, that's sort of getting us away.
I just think it's interesting that we also don't find anything out about Eric Rudolph, the actual bomber. We just see him. All that happens is we see him, we see him make the phone call. We see him drop the bomb, we see him make the phone call, and then Sam Rockwell's like, they caught the guy, and then that's the entirety of Eric Rudolph in the story.
Because that's the final happiness, that it is proven he is completely...
Once and for all, he is proven completely innocent.
Yeah. So that nobody can have conspiracy theories about how he got off.
How he got away with it, and he was really working. No, it is, and the thing is, it's a very nice coda to the film. Like this little Sam Rockwell going to see him at his police officer desk job and being like, we got him.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a sweet ending. And the thing is, like, whatever I might bring up about what political message they were trying to get in and like the treatment of the reporter, which I think was unfair, all that aside, it really is a powerful story about, you know, what one person does when they're up against an entire government. It's like, well, what resources do you have? What do you have on your side? And really, all you have is the law.
Yeah.
Right? And that is what I find fascinating about the story, fundamentally, because the government, you know, at its core, it has to follow these laws or else it has no legitimacy. And so when the FBI starts violating someone's civil rights, there's actually a law to deal with that, like the FBI. And that's what I really liked about Richard Jewell's performance in it. Like the guy playing Richard Jewell is the agony he goes through trying to separate like his respect for America and his love of America. He's trying to separate. He can't separate that from, well, then you should just always do what the government tells you to do. No, like, and at its core, America is a system of laws and agreements, and the government is supposed to enact those laws. You're right. They also have to follow the laws. And the minute the government stops following those laws, the government's not legitimate. And that's what he has the hardest time wrapping his head around. And of course, because his lawyer is a libertarian.
Yeah.
I mean, we made talks crap about libertarian a second ago, but because his lawyer's a libertarian, he really cares about this stuff. Mm-hmm. He can explain to Richard that no, like, it's not just because, right, they wear suits and they have badges and they say the FBI, that doesn't mean they're following the law, and that doesn't mean you have to default to respecting them.
Yeah, it's like that whole part of it is fascinating. Plus, he's an old, we now would call him an old style libertarian.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Right? He's not one of the modern libertarians.
He's not a modern libertarian, right? No. And,
oh, God. I mean, like, I love the wonderful pre 9/11 naivete of the poster on his wall that says, I fear terrorism less than I fear the government.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like, oh, you sweet, naive man. That's all going to be thrown away in 5 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, exactly. Your kind of libertarian isn't going to exist anymore in 5 years. Mm-hmm. 9/11 really messed up America.
Yeah. When you watch this, I mean, it was bad enough, but at least they got some compensation out of it, some recompense. Oh, yeah. The government, I mean, the basically the laws all. in the end.
Yeah, the laws did what they were supposed to do in the end.
And he was...
What I love is, like, fundamentally, like, they don't even rub it in your face. And that's what I thought was so smart about the movie. All he does is he says to him, like, they cannot compel you to speak. He doesn't say those words. It's like, don't say, like, I'm your lawyer. You want me to be your lawyer? I'm your lawyer. Here's the rule. Don't say anything unless I'm in the room with you, and never sign anything.
It was so fun. But I mean, and the thing is that the movie was so funny. Oh, and part of what you have to understand is that they did have tapes.
Yes.
Because the FBI bugged his house.
And they recorded his fake interrogation. They bugged the office. So it's like a lot of this is sourced from like the first party tapes of this stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of amazing the amount of stuff they were able to get right because of that.
Yeah, because the FBI really, you know, screwed up. And I mean, and the whole business with the Tupperware, like, there are so many things in this movie that you sit there, first of all, and of course, Richard Jewell is in many ways his own worst enemy at times.
Oh, God, yeah.
Right? And his lawyer is just like banging, he doesn't bang his head against the wall, but you know, he wants to.
Yeah, he just has to. Oh, yeah. He's just like, no, you've gotta understand that it's like fundamentally, you think being innocent, the fact that you're innocent, is going to somehow save you. Yeah. That's not the way the law works.
And that's not the way these guys are going to operate. Yeah. Doesn't matter that they wear, the badge.
Yeah, it doesn't matter that they have the badge. They think, and I think it's the perfect sign, right, of, like, this mindset that exists in so many police officers, right? Where, and, I mean, it's throughout the world this mindset exists. But basically, people have a problem where once they decide a thing, they can't ever change their mind about that thing.
Yeah. Well, look how...
Please.
Go on.
I was going to say that the best example is, did you watch the docudrama they made about Central Park 5, When They See Us? It's amazing because these guys were these five kids were framed for a crime and tricked into confessing, and it was just a horrible nightmare for them, right?
Yeah.
And they lost 20 years of their lives, right? It was just, well, 15, 20 years of their lives, and they were humiliated in public, and it was just a nightmare, especially for the one of them who was tried as an adult, which, oh God, that poor kid. But anyway, the thing, who was not with them on that night.
Who wasn't even there.
Like, he wasn't even with the group of kids running around in the park. He was literally just home that night, or out with people that night, completely unrelated, but he was framed by the cops. And the crazy part is, right, to this day, you will have people saying, well, maybe they could have still been involved. Like, people are that unwilling to admit they were wrong. People will go to any ridiculous extent to admit they were wrong. And that is personified in this movie. And John Hamm saying, even when there is no reason to believe, literally the only reason they believe that Richard Jewell did it is because they decided Richard Jewell did it.
Yeah.
Like that's it. And to his last moment in the movie, John Hamm is like, I still think you did it. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It gets crazy, but that's what people are like. They will do any mental gymnastics possible to keep from having to change their mind.
Okay, and what you saw to balance that off was that Richard Jewell, too, couldn't change his mind.
Exactly.
It was unbelievable how difficult it was for him to finally understand that these cops were going to frame him. They had decided he was guilty and they were not his friend. I mean, it leads to some of the more comedic parts.
The whole beautiful scene where they're taking apart his house and it's like he can't stop trying to be nice to them.
Yeah, and help them.
Yeah, he can't stop trying to help them and be nice to them.
And then they come in again and try and get him to...
to get him to the recording thing? Of the phone call. Oh my God.
You know, and his lawyer is just like living.
Charge in. Oh.
Yeah. You know, they see the lawyer is gone, so they're going to try and get him again because he just can't seem to get it through his head.
Yeah, that these guys on your side, Richard.
They're just because you're innocent doesn't mean that they're going to accept it.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like people, once you have made a decision about a thing, like once you believe something to be true, it is hard for you to believe that it's not true. Like people can live in all kinds of denial, and that is what the FBI in this movie is a perfect example of that, because they start out with no evidence that he did it. And then the whole movie, they just try to find evidence to make their presupposition true.
As I said, the Tupperware stuff.
I know.
Kathy Bates was wonderful as his
Kathy mother. Bates really was wonderful as the mother.
You know?
Yeah, the Tupperware stuff. It is like how the honestly, the beautiful, it's like, well, you know, you could have made that. And the line is, they're saying like, yeah, you know, people will not normally use Tupperware to make this kind of bomb and keep in their ass. But it's like, yeah, stop talking about how expert you are in bomb. Like how much you know about bomb making.
Because he explains everything to him. And then this business of, but I want them to know I'm not a homosexual.
Oh, I know.
Because then they decided he was in a homosexual relationship with one of his friends, right?
Yeah, and that's why they did the bombing together. Oh, my God.
And, you know, and you're just sort of sitting there.
Oh.
Yeah, he was his own worst enemy.
He was. Like, that's the big message of the movie, is, like, he was just his own worst enemy the whole time. Like, he genuinely wanted to do the right thing all the time. He didn't see how many problems that was causing. Like, he was incapable of seeing how many problems that was causing for himself.
Ugh. Yeah. You know, and his, you know, and so the ending is very nice.
Oh, it is.
You know, Sam Rockwell, the lawyer's character, marries his secretary and they have two children, and Richard Jewell's mother.
They're still close with the mother.
And babysitting
the kids. Yeah. Like it's a sweet ending. And that's the thing. Like, the tragic part of this is that Richard Jewell did die very young. He died at 44. And, I mean, as we talked about walking out of the theater, you know, in real life, all of these characters smoke, right? Like, obviously, it's the modern day, and you can't show smoking in movies, but every single one of these characters is definitely a smoker.
Oh, for sure.
100% these characters. I mean, he was overweight, he smoked, he drank. I'm sure it was heart disease complications from diabetes. Like, I'm sure that's what happened to him. But it's like, because even though there's this tragedy, right, that he died so young, like, history has vindicated this man, and there is a happy ending to that. You know?
Yeah.
Like, the persecution he suffered, like, at the end of it, well, I know it's a weird thing to say, but it provides you with this important reminder that it's not the people in the government, right? It's not the American government that has power. It's the founding documents of America. It's the Constitution of America. It's the law of America that has the power, right? And that is what's looking out for the citizens, because people can be corrupted, but fundamentally, a constitution can't be corrupted. It can be a bad constitution. You know, there could be bad stuff in the constitution, like slavery getting ended for everyone except for prisoners. That's a bad part of the constitution. You know, prohibition was probably a bad part of the constitution.
At least it got repealed.
Oh, exactly. But the laws are there to protect people, right? The laws are there to look out for people, even when the government won't look out for people.
Yeah. And I think that, I mean, and that is pretty clear. Like, I mean, and there were so many moments, like when the lawyer comes in and says, okay, what haven't you told me? Do you have any guns?
I know.
And and it's before Georgia. He even ends, he says, well, of course you do. This is Georgia.
Yeah, it's Georgia.
You know, and then he tells him to go get his guns out so the FBI can't accuse him of trying to hide them.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah,
exactly.
So then you see all of these guns.
Beautiful shot of all of those
on his bed.
Oh, of his 12 guns. I like to hunt.
And what do you need all of the? And then, you know, the lawyer just gives up, right?
Yeah, because I mean, what are you gonna do?
What are you gonna do, right?
It's Georgia, yeah.
You know, and you see all these FBI guys coming in, and they pack everything up. Now, I will say this much about these guys, is that everything that she had in Tupperware, they actually bagged it.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like they threw it out or anything else. They bagged it for her and they took away the containers. And she keeps going, but my Tupperware. Why are they taking my Tupperware?
It is such a good scene.
Yeah, you know, it was, I mean, right across the board. And you see them, you see the process they're going through in the warehouse, basically, where they've got all this stuff.
Yeah.
A little bit. Like, it was really...
Well, you know what the most entertaining thing, and I think this is going to be a perfect place to tie it back into Criminal Minds and wrap this up, but my favorite thing in the whole movie is that if you ever wondered, is the stuff we say about profiling extravagant, is calling profiling the villain of this movie going too far? There is a beautiful scene in this movie that you will recognize from a number of different episodes of Criminal Minds, because they go to do their face-to-face interview with Richard Jewell, where they brought him down. It's not custodial. He's not under arrest, but he's there to be interviewed by the FBI about his involvement in the case. And of course, there is no involvement, but what do they do? How do they prep the interview room? Every single piece of evidence in the case is sitting there in the living room. So they've got pictures of the thing. They've got the bench that they have carefully reassembled. And it's like all of the psychological tricks they're always talking about in Criminal Minds, mm-hmm. right? It's like, we'll put all of this, we'll reassemble the bench as a psychological way of letting you know that, yes, we've put together every piece of the crime. We know everything that happens. And it's like, you can see in practice, this is how they treat it. They pulled up the payphone and they put the payphone in the room.
Yeah.
They have pieces of the bomb. They have the payphone. They have the pictures of the injured people. Like, they put it all up there as a site, you know, part of psychological warfare against their coming to interview. And we see them doing that all of the time on Criminal Minds and talking about how that's how they're going to crack people, by doing that kind of trick to them. And what's funny is when you watch this movie, no, like, yeah, but he's not, when fundamentally all of your tricks don't matter, he's not guilty.
Well, they don't work because
he's fundamentally, he's not guilty. Although honestly, if he hadn't have had a good lawyer, who the hell knows what would have happened to Richard Jewell?
Yeah.
Like, what if they had done the police special of keeping Richard Jewell in a room for 72 hours? And started pulling that crap that they always do, where it's like, hypothetically, if you had done something like this, how would you have done it?
And he would have talked. There.
Of course he would have talked.
Because
he wanted to help.
All the time.
He loves, well, hey, he can't stop talking. That's the thing. His whole character is that he can't stop talking, but fundamentally, he wanted to help.
Yeah.
So they're like, they would have said, oh, Richard, you're an expert on things like this, right? You've studied a lot of this. How would you have done it? And then they would have started, and then they would have talked that way to him until they had backed him into admitting that he is the kind of person who could have done it, and they would have had him signing a false confession. Because that's what cops do. Once they've decided someone who has done it, they will go to any lengths to put that person away. And that is why false confessions have led so many people to spend their lives in jail. Because the cops decide someone did it, and they just go to any lengths to get it done. And they always justify it to themselves, because my hunch was this person did it, so it doesn't matter if I did unethical things to get them. Dirty Harry taught me that's fine. I mean, yeah. They don't say Dirty Harry taught me that's fine, but, you know, that is who did it. It is the American mindset of, you know, you've got to do whatever you got to do to get the bad guy. And this movie, weirdly, is a critique of everything that, you know, the Dirty Harry films were about.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
This is about the system working.
Yeah. It's a strange thing in some ways for Clint Eastwood to do, but as I said, it belongs with Gran Torino.
Yeah.
Which was also a strange movie in some ways.
A strange departure for him in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Yeah, in a lot of ways. You know?
It's kind of amazing.
Both of those movies made me cry. Like, yeah. I didn't sob, but I had tears in my eyes.
Oh, yeah. At the end of this one, absolutely. It's just a strong, I mean, and that's fundamentally, it's a really strong movie. I may have some things that annoyed me here and there, but fundamentally, this is a strong movie telling an important story. And I think, and I mean, we can say, oh, well, is this really the right moment to have a movie where the FBI is the bad guy with Bush, oh my God, with Trump in the White House? Is this really the time? But, and the answer is yes, it still is, because the movie isn't about how the FBI are bad guys. The movie is about how the system is there, like, trust the system, trust the Constitution, exercise your rights, and even the little guy can fight the government. And I think that's a really good message to have right now.
Yeah, so, yeah, except
I think
that,
it's a really positive message.
Yeah,
and except that Trump supporters think he's the little guy. Yeah. That's actually part of the problem.
So I don't know, like, I have no idea. As you said, it's probably because he was in Tanya.
Yeah.
This
movie is because he was in I, Tanya. Yeah.
That's the other thing that we didn't mention is that they do actually show real film clips.
They show a little bit of footage of the actual Richard Jewell to let you know what an amazing job this guy did.
And you know, Katie Couric, that, and I don't know.
Yeah, the actual Katie Couric interview with the real Richard Jewell in the background.
Yeah, yeah.
Such a nice little scene.
Yeah, there was so many things about this movie that were
it's extremely well made.
And so, all I could do too, part of what was happening to me when I was driving back, as I said today, and I kept thinking, okay, well, what about the Atlanta Choppers? And I'm trying to think, and I'm going, oh yes, of course, Manhunter, the second season of Manhunter. Yeah. That's where you saw all.
Yeah,
of
that's
this.
Where we saw them covering all of that.
And the problem in Atlanta.
Yep.
That because that didn't happen that much earlier than this.
No, this is the. I mean, no, that's 15 years earlier, but or 10 years earlier. So yeah, it's a decent amount of time different, but it's still Atlanta. They've still got these kinds of problems.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to wrap it up here. Thanks, everybody, for joining in this special episode. If you've already watched Richard Jewell, I hope we gave you some stuff to think about. If you haven't watched Richard Jewell and you listened to all of it, okay, it's still worth watching.
And I backed, and I will back down a little bit on what I started off in the beginning, because but it still angers me.
Well, no, it rankled you the wrong way, especially because they were trying to invalidate the whole movie.
Yeah, invalidate the whole movie.
And they really should not have done that.
And part of me just says, but that's what's so wrong.
Yeah. We'll dismiss an entire thing. I totally get that. And I mean, this is
black and white.
Yeah. And I mean, the thing is, the film has so many really important messages in it that it is too bad that someone would dismiss it because of one bad decision. And honestly, if you wanted to keep that stuff about her sleeping with FBI agent there, just change the character's name, Clint. Jesus Christ. You know, the FBI agent isn't a real guy.
Nope.
Change the character's name. All right. But yes. And if you want to see how we really feel about the FBI, you can, in about 7 months, hear our episode talking about, I think the episode was called Hero Worship. We have a lot to say about the FBI and Richard Jewell in that episode too.
It was
disgusting. No, it's a disgusting episode of television that honestly, it makes you wonder. Well, no, I mean, it's Jim Clemente's fault, but you know, wonders how they got away with it. And it's because Jim Clemente is there telling them it's a good idea. It's disgusting. But anyway, thanks for listening. If you have any questions for us, if you have any suggestions for profiling-related fiction you think we should watch, you can drop us a line at profilingcriminalminds@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. We will see you back here on Thursday for the start of Suspect Behavior, which is a very interesting Criminal Minds miniseries we did. And then, of course, in the next Thursday, we're going back. We're currently involved in a discussion of whether we're going to start up season 7 or whether we're just going to make the Thursday episodes be watching season 15 of Criminal Minds. We might do that if I can find a way to watch them Wednesday night when they air. So, fingers crossed, this should be a lot of fun. But yeah, join us back here for that. But until then, as always, thanks for listening and au revoir.
See you Thursday.
Profiling Criminal Minds is a member of the Kinks
Podcasting Network.